slightly optimistic title, describes some work that I've done with Ed Berchinger at MIT, who's my thesis advisor. And I think Michael did a really good job of introducing a lot of the stuff that I'll be using in my talk. So this is based on some work done by Fardel et al. Last year, where they identified a set of merger features in M31 that they say shows evidence for including one or more dynamical caustics. So what that said to me was we should at least check to see whether this is a possible detectable feature in gamma ray self-annihilation, for the simple reason that we have an optical counterpart and it's far removed from the galactic center. And M31 is close enough that you can resolve features with glass. So anyway, to introduce this system, this is the figure from their paper that outlines the structures that they were modeling with an unbodied simulation. So over here is a star count map of M31. And what they did to identify these features was put a Sobel filter on this, which does a thing like a derivative to highlight bright lines in this figure that are sharp changes in density in this. So they found this hard to see, but this guy right here and that right there, and then this tidal stream, which is easier to see in this figure. And they sort of fit these shapes. And I think the original, oh yeah, that would probably be good.
Which one?
Yeah.
So maybe that's a little easier to see now. Anyhow, they use this image to find a better fit for the shape of these things that they call shelves. And so the idea, I think, originally, or at least how I got from their work, was to see if these were all related to the same progenitor by constructing an N-body model. But it's also a useful way to infer three-dimensional density information from a two-dimensional image. So this is some results from their paper and their N-body model that they constructed. This is a plot that is to be compared to the one on the previous slide. And it shows some random sampling of the particles they used in their N-body realization of this merger to show that these three features are all plausibly part of the same thing. So they did not use a live halo for this. They used a model that was actually constructed to fit M31's rotation curve that was in a previous paper. So one of their constraints, of course, is the shape of these features, which is those red dots. And then they also had some line of sight velocity information that they used to basically convince you that this was a plausible model for the progenitor of these features. These red diamonds in this plot correspond to line of sight measurements of velocity of planetary nebulae that are thought to be associated with this big stream. And note that this is in different coordinates than this. So this major axis position is along the disk in 31, which looks like here. And this, there's a cut that's been made on these dark particles, which are the M-body particles. And the green ones that they colored here are thought to be associated with the same stream as these planetary nebulae were. So this is just to convince you that this might be a logical way to unify these features into one merger product. In addition to this, they also found evidence that at the very least, this thing, because of this clip, you can kind of convince yourself. It shows some evidence that this might be a shell in the sense of a caustic at the turnaround radius of particles in that part of the system. And so what I wanted to do was reconstruct this simulation and then use it to do an integral density square to see what kind of signal it might have. Assuming that, in fact, that was a caustic, which it seems that it's plausible. Although the litmus test, as Murph will probably tell you tomorrow, is to go back and find the Jacobian everywhere. But I didn't build a Jacobian meter for this. Anyway, so here's a movie, just to give you a sense. And this is what you would see if you had super speed-up vision. And you can see that this tail sort of forms And then you get this guy over here forming, and then this guy. And this is, again, a sampling of the particles. The simulation that I reconstructed was about 200,000 particles. Theirs was like 130,000. So, and the time scale of this has been deliberately chosen to help reproduce the morphology. So there's not only a free parameter space in the initial conditions of the satellite that merges with the galaxy, but also in the time that the merger started. So that, of course, brings up lots of questions about the degeneracy of that. But yeah, so the fact that the orbit is pretty radial is one reason that would support the idea that this thing is actually a shell, right? Because the more radial it is, the shellier the structure is going to be, sort of in general. So this was all, up until now, I've just been talking about stars, right? So at this point, I have to make an assumption about if I'm going to do, if I'm going to assume that this thing has some dark matter associated with it, what sort of association to make. And I did basically the easiest thing, which you can argue with, which is just to assume that instead of stars, I have dark matter. So the problem here is, of course, you have no guarantee that the stars and the dark matter and something like this are going to be distributed in the same way. There are also a couple of constraints from the surface brightness of this stream on exactly how much dark matter could have been left over in this progenitor, but it allows for sort of a factor of two in mass-to-light ratio. I think probably the biggest thing to say about this assumption is that the stars are likely to be more concentrated than the dark matter was. But again, the beginning of this simulation starts at a point where the thing has already been somewhat tidally stripped. It's close enough to M31 at the start of this simulation that would have already happened. So anyway, let me just show you a three-dimensional realization of this. So you can see that from different angles, of course, you get different projection effects, but you can see that there's these radial turning points that are what's supposed to correspond to the cossacks. You can play this against. Z in this case is the direction along the line of sight. And that's the orientation that we look at it. Did you have a question? Yeah. Oh, I forget. It's on the order of between 1500 kilometers a second. So they're pretty sharp. You actually, it's nice. I should say that this thing that merges with M31 in the simulation is about 1/100 of the mass of M31. So it's okay to use a static halo, but not completely great. So Michael already went over this, but I liked this formalism for calculating the gamma ray flux because it meant that I didn't have to do any particle physics because some games had already done it. So you can break up as these people do in their paper. Lydia can correct me if I say anything wrong here. You can break this up into the particle physics component and a distribution of dark matter component. And this paper did a very complete exploration of parameter space for this part. And so I sort of took their most optimistic upper limit case in the exploration of that parameter space. And so in that sense, this is going to be an upper limit on the flux. But there's one caveat to that, which I'll get to. And then all you have to do is the integral over density squared. In this case, you have several components to rho squared, because you have the halo particles from M31's halo, and then also the shell merging in. So you actually get an enhancement from the fact that the dark matter from the progenitor can interact with the dark matter in halo, which is nice. And then D here is 785 kiloparsec, which is M31.
In terms of percent of a smooth halo, what's the density of the shell, approximately?
The density of the shell?
Yeah.
The contrast, well, it turns out to be such that, I'll sort of answer your question in a minute. It turns out that this term actually is over here.
So that may answer your question. So yeah, I should make a note to, in deference to people who actually work on glass. I sort of mocked up a gamma ray telescope to do this. So I sort of took the approximate spatial resolution. Oh, before I go on, I should mention this Q is the yield, so number of photons per self-annihilation. And so you have to pick an energy threshold for that, and I picked 1 GeV. So there's the efficiency. But anyway, so you get, and so I constructed an analytic realization for the MFW halo that's consistent with the one that was used to realize the merger. And you can see that there's a contrast when you include all the terms from the previous slide. But these units are pretty ridiculous. I should note that like this is pretty bright for M31 because the concentration of this halo is pretty high, at least relative to what I...
So do we have to multiply this by the effective area of blobs?
Yeah, so that's why I put it in meters squared, so that you could multiply by about...
8,000 centimeters squared? Right.
Yeah, so it's like between 1 and 10. Yeah.
So it's 8 times, so you get...
Eight times that.
Okay.
Yeah. So...
Oh, the starts of the color.
Yeah, so if you look at the color scale here, you're not going to be seeing this in glass. You're going to, with this particular halo model, you'll see something in the middle.
So what was the mass-to-light ratio that you assumed for the... for the disrupted satellite?
For the disrupted satellite? So like I said, I just used dark matter instead of stars. So whatever it was for the stars, like times two.
Great.
Yes.
Do you compare this to the effects of gamma rays from cosmic rays in Andromeda?
No, not yet. But because really, like, let me show you. If you can subtract off the NFW halo, I mean, you don't really get enough flux here to be worried about cosmic rays, or confusing it with cosmic rays. So I was mostly curious to see whether this was an observable thing, and it looks like it's not from what I've done here. Yes.
What's the trouble time scale for the like the MOPI?
Yeah, this is 840 gig.
Okay. So that thing fell in from somewhere. I guess I'm just wondering, you know, one naive model would be, yes, at the start of your MOPI it stripped, but mm-hmm. it had some bigger dark matter halo, and presumably you could take that orbit and integrate it backwards. And the previous wraps in the orbit, it would be losing dark matter preferentially at larger radii. So I don't know whether that would help or not. I mean, I guess if the Dalma turns the halo density times the stream density, maybe it doesn't help.
You want to wait until you get in the middle.
But it would be, I mean, I don't know.
The initial orbital elements of the satellite are not too well constrained. So that would be sort of a thought exercise more than a realistic thing, but you could do that. Although, yeah, the term in here that dominates is the one that's got payload density in it.
I mean, the orbital elements must be pretty well constrained because you have in this model you have like three centers, and so you must be able to figure out how much it's processing.
Yeah, so you can get a good handle on it.
So you'd think you could figure out where the previous one was.
Yeah, it's possible. I haven't thought about it before.
But the mass is larger in the past, right?
Yeah,
exactly. So you'd have much more mass that presumably would have got stripped off in the pericentric passage before it hit the center of the...
The amplification, though, that passed presumably was therefore, like, you know, a lot stronger, so right everything.
Oh, but I don't know whether that would have a big torque on the thing, right? I mean, it would just, I don't know.
but I still don't understand. So you're saying the mass, as you assume, is comparable to the stellar mass, but it could be, I don't know, 100 times larger than the stellar mass.
Oh, so where the place where the satellite starts in the simulation is at a point where a lot of the dark matter halo, if there was one, would have already been tidally stripped.
Tidally stripped.
So if you, here.
Presumably there's a limit in the Hartle model on the mass from dynamical friction. That it had a big, if it was started this movie, it had a really big mass. Carries under with the kick faster.
Yes. So, but yeah, you can see, so this is what a few degrees is like, it's like 30 kilograms. Starts a little farther. Alright, anyway. So, of course, there's a lot of stuff that goes into this behind the scenes. I just want to point out a couple of things. One is this resolution issue, which Michael touched on. And in this case, it's actually even worse, because if there are actually caustics in here, then you're limited by the interparticle spacing when you estimate the density. So, and it's actually even a little bit worse, because not only are you not resolving the caustics, but you're not estimating the density right when you numerically estimate it from the particle distribution. So there's sort of two ways in which that comes into play. I don't think that's going to correspond to boost factor of 10 to the 4. But anyway, also, I think it's interesting to consider what would happen if you put this in a live halo, since you had to deal with dynamical friction to get the thing down there in the first place. But that's sort of a dynamical concern. And then there's a lot of other physical things you can add into this. There was no spin in the progenitor. There was no, the dark matter fraction is a sliding thing. And like you said, there's some stripping that would have happened. I did find one rather interesting thing. So the model that they used for the parent potential of M31 sort of had an NFW halo and a bulge and a disk in it. And it was within the allowed parameter space that fits the rotation curve of M31, but there's some give in there. You can trade surface density in the disk for halo concentration and so forth. And within that parameter space, there was another couple of models that sort of varied these two parameters. And I was curious, since the prospects for actually detecting this stuff at gamma rays is not so great, I was curious, though, what dynamically this would imply. And so you can change this around. This is the original outcome. This is using their best fit halo from the paper that was earlier in this series. And this is if you use a low concentration. So you get a big difference dynamically just from manipulating the concentration of the halo a little bit. So I just started looking at this. But it was kind of a tantalizing hint. Although you do have some freedom in choosing the evolution time of the system and the
initial conditions of the satellite. I mean, I didn't say this earlier, but this tail is a good lever arm for the initial conditions as well, because if you don't get them approximately right, the tail won't be in the right place. And that tidal stream is pretty well constrained by observations at least in the but that's sort of one thing to be looked at from this. I thought that this was not so much it turned out to be not so much a realistic sort of signal prediction kind of thing, but it is an interesting framework for talking about what kind of information can be gotten from these structures. Up until now, I think every talk has basically focused on bound subhalos within larger subhalos. But I think also there's a lot of information to be gained from these merger remnants that are not bound. So although this particular structure, of course, turns out not to be observable, we do actually have a lot of structures much closer that should be looked at, since we do know of many merger remnants in Milky Way. That's about it.
Matt Coleman has published some evidence for shell structure in stars around the Fornax dwarf galaxy.
Oh, really? Sorry.
You might be interested to look into some of his tables to see if that might be something that you could easily sort of plug into the
right, exactly. Okay, cool. Yeah, let me talk to you about that. Thanks.
Another thing to consider might be X-ray emission from top scattering of CMB photons by the electron come out in the annihilation.
So, go ahead.
So, what's symmetric areas? Is it, would it produce a detectable pulse? Because it does have. There is a turnaround point which is pretty far out of the galactic plane, right? Where right. You know from the stellar distribution there's a turnaround there. So I guess it's spread over presumably a wide patch of the sky. I don't know whether it's it's quite a broad stream. The dark matter at the pine are that's just when the strip material has similar apparent density as the local payload. So it's hard to get a contrast over the local payload since the strip material then moves out of the stream. You have to really focus very well again.
I guess that's true. You have to see the edge on to get a
contrast.
Yeah.
the other thing which I don't know how possible this is from a particle physics point of view, but I always figure if you throw in a velocity spectrum, velocity average cross section, no volts barred,
right?
And all sorts of stuff come up.
Yeah, people have played that game. For instance, if you have a strong dependence on the velocity, then the annihilation cross section theory you use is different from the annihilation. I mean, the annihilation cross section increases. It's very different from the radiation cross section in the local universe, in particular, in terms of the galaxy.
Right.
So there are people who try to use this fact to look for signals around supermassive black hole, for instance, where you would have a particle that speed up almost at the speed of light near the horizon. It's always very, very difficult to get a significant number of photons out of those interactions. Okay, so let's thank Robin again.